Gordon Ford.
Here.
Darren Garrett.
Here.
Jeff Grover.
Here.
Mike Lynch.
Here.
Ron Martin.
Here.
Linda Stotz-Burnett.
Here.
Clarence Willman. We have a quorum.
Are there any announcements?
We have some announcements today. We'll start with Kathy Herman on the audio recording.
Okay, we have our new audio equipment. As you can see, the new microphones are on the table. They are wireless. And it's very obvious that they're on because they're green. And all the equipment is in the closet, and I'm still running it off the laptop here. It was not absolutely completed until about 15 minutes before the meeting today, so we're running parallel. So we have two sets of recordings going today, so every breath you take is being recorded today. So we expect, it sounds really good, we just didn't have all the configurations and stuff done in order to test it out fully, so we're going to do it.
Okay. We have some changes and some non-changes on the retirement board. We had a retiree election for seat number 8. Michael O'Neill has been elected as retiree representative beginning July 1st, 2011. And he is here today in the audience, Michael O'Neill. Also, we had an election of seat number 3, currently occupied by Clarence Woolman. Donna Riley won that election, so she will be seat number 3 general member representative beginning July 1st, 2011. And the Board of Supervisors reappointed Mike Lynch, who is in seat 5, and Jeff Grover in seat 9 as retirement board trustees. Well, that's our update on new and reappointed trustees.
Any other announcements, Tom?
That's what I have so far.
Yeah. Any board member announcements? Okay, let's move on to public comments. Is there anyone here who wants to make a comment on an item that is not on the agenda? All right, thank you very much. Let's move to consent.
I move to approve the consent items,
and I'll second it.
Motion has been moved and seconded to approve consent. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Item 6, capital prospects. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you having us in to update you on the Small Cap Value Emerging Manager of Managers program that we look after for you. I'm Marilyn Freeman. Just as a refresher, my partner Liz Melk will spend a few minutes giving you an update on our firm, a brief overview of the investment process just as a refresher, and then mainly talk about an update on the program and how things are going. Again, we very much appreciate your having us in and the assets you've entrusted us with. You have the presentations, I think. Page 1 is just an update on the firm. We are rapidly approaching our 10th anniversary, which is hard to believe when we look back at how quickly these past 10 years have gone by. We are SEC registered. Liz and I equally co-own the firm. And we have a focus on the Manager of Managers investment programs. That's everything we do, very much focused on the emerging space, which is the small assets under management area. We've been in this business for a long time. Our focus is domestic in nature, which is what we look after for you, which is small cap value. The assets under management at the end of May are $1.1 billion. On behalf of 8 clients. It was a milestone for us at the end of 2010 to go through the $1 billion number. When we started the firm, it was with 0. So very hard chore that we had during this period, but we have 8 clients, all public funds. The breakdown of the assignments are listed at the bottom of the page. 4 of our 8 clients are Russell 3000 mandates. We have 2 in the area that we look after for you, which is small cap value. We have 1 small cap core program, and then what's called best ideas, which actually that client is moving to a traditional U.S. equity fixed income split as we speak right now. At this point, we have 36 funded emerging managers across all of our client accounts. Over to page 2 is our team with our areas of specific responsibility. There have been no changes. We still have a team of 6 women in Stamford, Connecticut, 5 of whom had come with us from our old organization, which was Northern Trust. Global Advisors. And it is our goal, as we've told you before, nothing has changed, to stay small and focused with Liz and myself being involved in all client relationships. We think that's critically important to the equation. So you see a little bit about how we break down the responsibilities. It is a small firm. We plan to stay that way. The brief bios are on page 3. As I say, we have a team of 6 women, and no changes planned in that regard. So we'll move on. Liz will bring you up to date a little bit about our research universe and then our investment process.
Well, our focus is very specialized on domestic managers, and as far as emerging, the definition of emerging goes, that is more recently established firms. Also, established firms, which is a large part of our database, who have more recently entered the institutional space, having started on the high net worth side. And then on an opportunistic basis, we will look at products within larger organizations, but that is not the bulk of our research work at all. We maintain what we term a focus list of about 170 equity managers spanning the entire market spectrum. It's a very dynamic universe. We are constantly adding people to that universe. And moving people off of the focus list if, for any number of reasons, if we no longer are really in contact with them, or some of them have gone out of business, some of them get too large. So it's very fluid. We do have another backup list of firms that we're starting the process with or still monitoring. That's about another 130 names. Although many of the firms that we're researching are newer, I would like to emphasize that the people are very, very experienced, having been typically with larger organizations for a long period of time before they go out and start a firm on their own. on the next page, page 5, there are just a few comments here regarding our investment strategy and objectives with regard to any type of program we're managing for a client. Our primary goal is to add value. That goes with every program that we are running, and that is also within the context of an acceptable risk profile, which we develop with the client. On the research side, our goal is to identify managers who we think are capable of developing unique insights and are supported by a solid implementation support group of people and processes that in combination can potentially give them a performance edge over other managers with maybe a similar philosophy. We look at putting together investment programs as very much of an engineering exercise, where our goal is to develop a very well-diversified investment program that allows participation across all of the components of the benchmark that we are being measured against. Our judgment of a manager's ability to add value is based on an evaluation of both qualitative and quantitative factors, and our value added is the way the program is put together, but more importantly, the active decisions of the managers relative to stock selection, sector and industry positioning, themes, and all of that that falls into what they are trying to accomplish. So if we move to page 6, the next 3 pages after page 6 have details on our investment process, but rather than go through that page by page, I'm just going to talk to this diagram here, which shows the 2 interrelated components of our investment process. One is the ongoing manager research and due diligence process, and the other is managing the investment programs themselves. So just looking first at the manager research side of things, we have a core database that we have developed over the years and that we are adding to. We have a number of new sources of manager ideas, but for the most part, it all involves interacting with others in the investment community to identify managers of interest. Our starting point is very much the qualitative side. Before we move to the quantitative side, we want to make sure that we find a manager of interest to us. And in order to develop our qualitative assessment, we review all of the material either provided by the managers or in databases that we subscribe to. But the key element is really the series of meetings that we have with the managers to meet the entire investment team and others in the organization to see how it all comes together and how their investment ideas are reflected in the portfolios ultimately. On the quantitative side, we analyze portfolios. We develop characteristics by taking holdings of a manager's portfolio and putting them through our analytical systems. And we also do look at historical returns and run all of the quantitative and analytical reports to get a picture of how things have worked in the past. The portfolio characteristics, what we're looking for there is really consistency over time and consistency relative to what we understand the manager's investment philosophy to be. The portfolio characteristics also give us an overall risk profile of the manager, which is important when we're trying to determine who we want to include in a combination that we're looking at. And on the performance side, apart from the various statistics, we really want to understand what decisions the manager was making that contributed to very good periods of performance and very poor periods of performance, because underlying dynamics change, and managers who may have had a difficult period in their performance may have done something within the process and the organization to really improve, and so they remain a candidate. It's just part of how we evaluate people over time. Moving over to the investment program management, the starting point is really to develop investment objectives and all of the parameters that are going to go into the program based on what the client is trying to achieve and what the risk tolerance is. And once we have a picture of that, it automatically kind of leads us to certain candidates within our universe who make sense to consider. And after we identify those, we actually test combinations of portfolios to look at characteristics and historical returns relative to what we're trying to achieve. Once we put together a manager mix on an ongoing basis, we evaluate all the managers in the program relative to how we selected them in the first place. We do regular attribution analysis to understand underperformance and outperformance and make changes as necessary. So that's a very quick overview of our process. And if you go to page 10, that just gives you a sense of the analytical systems that support our effort.
So we've added one system since we last updated you all on our resource commitment. The listing that you see here covers both manager database type information, which is really supportive when we're looking for historical returns or brief snapshots on managers. But our core system is really under the Thomson Reuters umbrella that is listed as Vestech here, which is really the fundamental analytics that we use when we're looking at managers and combinations. As Liz was describing, we begin with the actual portfolios of managers and put the actual holdings together to see what the risk profile looks like of the aggregate. So we've added, it has been equity oriented. As I mentioned earlier, one of our clients has shifted our mandate to include U.S. fixed income, and so we've added the fixed income module to that, and we'll be implementing that over the next few weeks. But this breaks down into manager database, core analytic data, and then returns-based analytics as well. And we're quite open. We're continually looking at new systems and things that can help us. You know, we know the tools we need, but it's a changing environment. We always are looking at what's out there that might be additive to what we do. But now, so to move on to the program review on starting on page 11, it was interesting to go back and look at the history since you awarded us this mandate in January of 2009, which was a very interesting period of time, considering that the market turned in March of that year. And so you really have benefited greatly by what has occurred in the market environment since that time. So there were a lot of people at that point in time that the inertia set in, and mandates that had been considered were not actually implemented. And so we think you very much have benefited by sticking to the course and putting into place the allocation as you had decided to do so. Funding date was very critical here. And the funding amount is there at $49.1 million. I thought it was interesting to go back and just look at the fact that given that rise, you've had scheduled cash flows both in 2010 and 2011, and then two rebalancing flows, one in 2010 and one that was just a few weeks ago, of $10 million, and then you look at the current value of $76 million. I think it's interesting to look at the absolute dollars of these things on occasion, because that gives you the evidence of what the period of time was that you participated in off of the market bottom in March of 2009. So the group of six managers is listed below with their current dollars that we have allocated to them. And we'll just flip over to page 12 and review the equity characteristics.
So this is a mix of managers, all with the Russell 2000 value benchmark, but each one of them kind of approaches investing in the value universe in a somewhat different fashion, and all of them have various degrees of quantitative and fundamental and technical analysis as part of their approach, and our objective is to develop a balanced mix overall. So it is positioned as partially a core strategy, which makes up about 60% of the fund, and that includes Channing, InView, and Ten, who are kind of more, if you would say, kind of traditional value managers. The remaining 40% we term as more eclectic, three managers, Bernsatt, Keeley, and Waldhausen, that have maybe pinpointed some specific elements of value that they like to focus on as part of their strategy. There are brief descriptions of each manager's approach on pages 19, 20, and 21. I'm not going to go over each one individually, but they're there to take a look at. The overall portfolio, we feel, is very well diversified. There is a bias towards higher quality. That happens to be sort of a typical bias in the way that we look at managers, preferring that over low quality. The other thing that we like to see is a PEG ratio, growth to PE, that is at a discount to the market, which we feel indicates a good value situation typically. And we've also run this program at what we feel is a moderate risk level. We measure that in terms of tracking error, which we feel should normally fall between 3 and 5%, and that's where it's been and where it is currently. page 13 just shows the breakdown. This is actually the date on there, should be March 31st, of the managers' portfolios by sector. The way the overall fund is composed is really a fallout of the managers' individual decisions, and they vary. This is an interesting benchmark in that well over a third of it is financials. So how the portfolio, the overall program is positioned in that regard does have an influence on the overall results, which thus far has been positive. We have been underweighted in that area. You'll see that one manager, 10, who is pretty much sector neutral, has a high exposure, as you would expect, but everybody else has been underweighted. But these, we monitor these, and they change over time. Pages 14 and 15, you had requested the last time that we include top 10 holdings, so we have that there for all the managers and the fund as a whole, and I think we're including this now in the quarterly report as well. So for the fund as a whole, the top 10 holdings are a little under 10%. And then on page 16, actually 17 and 18 kind of go calendar year by year and partial calendar year.
to talk about the dynamics that were in place in the market and how the program performed during those time periods. But rather than go over each period individual, I'm just going to summarize how the program has done. It has been a challenging investment environment because we caught the tail end of the market downturn, and then the market upturn, which was a very strong upward move in the market, but it was dominated by lower price, lower quality stocks for the first 12 months, and then starting end of first quarter last year was a very choppy environment where it looked like fundamental analysis and stock picking having fundamental analysis and valuation more rationally linked than just preferring lower quality was really taking hold, which is a much better environment for the managers that we select, given that they are stock pickers. But that just kind of went back and forth, and it wasn't really until the end of last year that it really seemed to be more of a stock picker's environment, if you will. That was very much the case at the beginning of this year, but more recently we've seen more turmoil in the market as people have been unclear as to the strength of the recovery. So it's been challenging, we will say that. We have done well in this environment. Our managers, we don't expect them all to be outperforming at the same time because they do have different approaches, and that is the whole idea, an average, that we will do well, but it's unlikely that anyone is always going to be hitting on all cylinders. So at the end of the 29 months since inception, the program net of fees is 514 basis points ahead of the benchmark annualized. The outperformance has been driven both by sector positioning and stock selection. Earlier on, more sector-oriented. More recently, more stock selection-oriented. But, those are factors contributing to that. The underweighting financials, in particular, a low exposure to banks, has been a very key positive. I've listed here some of the other overweightings, as well as certain sectors in which stock selection has been more notably contributing. We've been pleased with all the managers in the program. As I said, they're not all hitting on top cylinder all the time. But we only have one manager of the six in the program that at this point is somewhat behind the benchmark since inception, and that is Keeley. The environment for his approach, which is very much focused on corporate restructurings and spin-offs, companies, financial institution conversions, companies selling below book value, there was not a good environment for that until business started picking up more recently. And with increases in M&A activities and companies looking to acquire others to bring growth into their own business, his returns have improved considerably, and he's very optimistic about the outlook for opportunities in his business, too. So that pretty much summarizes where we feel we are at this point. And any questions?
Yes, if I take a look at page 13 and 14, you were mentioning 10. And you mentioned financials. They're showing, if I read it right, 35.5% in financials. If I go to 14, I'm looking at the list, looking where I'm going in financials.
I'm sorry?
I'm trying to get a sense of where we're going, what financials we're going into.
Most of the financials that our managers have owned have been more in the asset management side, on the insurance side, and just away from banks. Banks is about, I think, half or so of the allocation in the financial sector.
So are any of these top 10 on 10 what you would consider asset manager, financial?
I think world acceptance is, and the Montpelier would fall in that category, although that appears to be a REITs are in that category. They are a significant portion of the financials, too. But he owns the most stocks of anyone, so I don't think they show up in the top 10, but they're...
It's 139.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're a quantitative manager, so
right,
they're more sector neutral.
Correct. Yeah, they run it as sector neutral.
Following up on 10, we've heard, rightly or wrongly, there's maybe some business risk with the firm. Can you update on that, or kind of what a plan B would be if you had a replacement?
We, if we had a replacement, we know who we would select for that. We're having continual conversations with them. The product that they've had the most assets in is a mid-cap value product, and they've lost some accounts there. And they are exploring avenues for their firm as to, you know, how to move forward in the future, either by aligning with another company. We are talking with them very frequently, and we don't see any risk to the investment process at this point. All of the investment people are in place, but the business side of it, they do need to, make some improvement there. So, but if it comes to the point where we need to have someone else in there, we know who we're going to put in.
We've done combination work to identify the firm that will replace them if we need to do so.
So you're ready to pull the trigger if you have to?
Yes, we need to. Correct.
Paul, do you have any other comments or observations? Members?
Continue to congratulate on your success.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your
Thank you all.
Relationship.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Inviting us. I have to say it's a great day to come to Modesto because it was pouring rain in San Francisco. So, my name is Lieve Mertens, and this is my colleague, Fawad Razak. So thanks for inviting us. I know we have a thick book, but we will, make it short so you have some time to ask questions. So this is the review of first quarter, but we have updated performance through May and through June.
Well, let's start with the 30-second comment on the market environment facing a manager. The year started with very strong performance by small cap growth, continuation from last year, led by pretty strong performance from technology sector, the speculative end of technology and some materials. In the second quarter so far, we've seen some partial reversal of that trend where small caps are still doing very well, but they're underperforming compared to large caps. But within small caps, the outperformance of growth or value continues. The sector leadership has broadened away from technology into healthcare, consumer discretionary, and some materials. While market is right now really focused on macroeconomic issues from the top down, and we haven't had the regular quarterly calls with the managers that can start next month. Off and on conversations with managers is not suggesting of any notable slowdown from the companies. Company level perspective, so their orders are still strong, and they're pretty upbeat. So top level concern is right. It feels pretty much similar to how it was at the middle of last year, when the market was again concerned about sovereign issues, and but then the July earnings were strong, guidance was good, and the market started its surge. And I won't be surprised if the same thing happens again. But the July quarter would be very, very pivotal. You know, we could see if the companies come up with good earnings and the guidance for the rest of the year would be important. But so far, there's no very little indication of it that they're seeing any issues down the line. So that's on the market. I think it'll be nice if I gave a 10-minute run of our investment process to refresh. Yes.
So we'll go to Appendix G.
To apologize a little bit further, it's Appendix G.
Page 48.
Yes.
And this is just a refresher to show what the goal is of a manager of management portfolios.
In fact, if you go to page 47, it's going to state what our investment philosophy is and what we're trying to accomplish. So we believe that a well-constructed multi-manager portfolio would have diversified sources of returns and diversified sources of risk. That will ensure a stable stream of alpha if the managers are high conviction. Well-constructed portfolio would mitigate noise and volatility at the portfolio level while you capture the stock level skills from the underlying sub-advisor. So that's the philosophy. And then I'm back to page 48.
Yes, so this shows different managers, who are the blue lines, and their over and under performance versus their benchmark. And it would be great if we could select, and the same is true for Cap Prospect, if we could select managers that all outperform all the time. It's just like, you know, just not possible. So that's why the orange line, it shows the total portfolio, which is a more stable excess return.
And well, I would say one comment. We, in fact, you know, so it's nice philosophically, you know, ideally to have all the managers going the same direction, but it's not a well-constructed portfolio. If at any snapshot of time, if look at the performance pattern of all the sub-advisors in the portfolio, if it's not looking like this, it means you may have an issue with the portfolio, which means that the manager's returns are very much correlated. So it's not diversified from the sources of return perspective. So in a five-manager structure, if your three managers are outperforming and one is underperforming and the other one is like benchmark-like return, that's a sign of a good portfolio to us.
So that's on page 48 for the excess return, and 49 shows the risk profile. So we want to combine managers where the total risk of the portfolio is less. So now we'll show you how we implemented that strategy in your portfolio. And then we go back to the beginning, appendix, tab 1 on page number 4. So Legato manages a small cap growth portfolio. This is data as of 3/31. At that time, it was about 17 million. As of last Friday, it's 57 million. There was a withdrawal in the beginning of June, and then also the market has taken away some of the assets. And we have made changes. Important to know is that we have made changes in the portfolio over the past 6 months, and we've used the cash flows also to implement the strategies that we want to include.
So towards the end of Q1, we introduced Eudaimonia Asset Management to the portfolio. And that's a blend of 75% micro and 25% small growth. And it was very intentional, looking at the portfolio. And if you look at most small cap managers, what they invest in, you find that across the 2000 index, at the low end of the liquidity, they would hesitate to invest. So there's kind of persistent underexposure to the lower market cap within the Russell 2000 index. So if you want full representation of the index, one way to get is to have a microcap manager in the portfolio or ask the microcap manager to create a blend. So Eudaimonia has microcap, ultra microcap, and small cap growth. And it's been on our focus list for a while. And we like that manager. So we asked them to have a blend that we can use in small growth. And now the index now covers the whole 100% of the benchmark. Microcap is roughly 15 to 20% of Russell 2000 on market cap. And if you look at managers, and we did some study back up.
It's Appendix E.
Appendix E.
Page 34.
So you can go through why from page 34 tells you what microcap is and where it comes from. So The microcap stocks is 1,000 of the smallest securities in Russell 2000 plus 1,000 more, like even smaller. And through our experience, some empirical evidence, going through lots of small cap managers, that managers are underexposed to microcap. And the plan sponsors, like yourself, you know, if you believe you're getting the whole representation across the cap spectrum from some small cap end, you know, you're missing microcap spectrum. So we plugged that hole in the lineup. Concurrent to that, you know, towards the end of last year, we lowered our conviction on one manager, Chinook. Excuse me. And the discussion and the decision to include microcap exposure in the portfolio was concurrent with the lower conviction on Chinook. So we trimmed Chinook late in the first quarter and funded Eudaimonia. And subsequently, you know, in second quarter, we removed the entire Chinook position from the portfolio. Now it's back to the five manager structure.
So if you look on page 5, shows a new target weight that was for April. So there was a 7.5 position in Chinook. So at this time, there is no more. The weight in Chinook is zero, and the other the assets have been split among the other managers. And we want to comment on the transition, so we use a transition manager, we use Straight Street to do that, and the process has gone very smoothly. It's like in one day trade, you know, all the securities are bought and sold for the new, so bought sold for the Chinook and bought for the new managers. If we go to page 7, shows the performance. First quarter was a slight underperformance, and then since inception is still outperformance. Then for the on page 8 shows you for the different managers. And then on page 9 shows you where we were to the end of May. And June has been a positive month. On page 10 shows the portfolio. So the important the column I want to show that I want to show you is a standard deviation, which shows the risk of the portfolio. And you see the 21.11 versus 23. The risk for the portfolio is lower than that of the benchmark. Page 11 shows you the attribution analysis. The goal of that is, where does the performance come from? Does it come from sector allocation, stock selection, and the combination of that? And as you see here, there was the technology, the stock selection in technologies was minus 0.86, which is a negative contribution to performance. On page 12 shows the top 10 holdings, which is below, around 10%. And then the sector weights, as you can see, just by looking at the picture, it's pretty much in line with what the benchmark has. On page 13, the number of securities, which is the top line, 510, it's over 500. It's a very well-diversified portfolio. And then it's on the PE forward, like a forward 12 month, about the middle of the page shows you a lower price earnings ratio. And at the bottom shows return on equity and total debt, which is a higher quality portfolio than what the benchmark has. Those are just the highlights. Then on page 14 shows you what Fawad was talking about, that the new manager, Eudaimonia, and we want to let you know that the name has changed. It's now EAM, so a lot easier. So Eudaimonia, they have a lot of weight in the less than 250 million and 250 to 500 million, so on the smaller capitalization range, compared to what the overall portfolio was is. So that's where we get the microcap exposure. Then on the risk, the tracking error, it's in line with what we expect and what was there before. no big changes. And the same with on page 16. In Appendix A, we'd like to just let you know that we received the new guidelines that were implemented. And then the top 10 holdings are behind the green sheet. And then we'd like to give you a brief overview of the managers.
Right. So page, starting with page 20, is Castle Ark. And so it's some facts about Castle Ark. And then in the middle, you know, performance expectation. What should you expect from your sub-advisors? What kind of market environment are favorable? What kind of environments would be unfavorable or pose headwinds to a manager? And it's very important for us while we construct portfolios to know ahead of the time what we should expect from managers, and so that we have expectations at the portfolio level. So this is Castle Ark. It's the earnings momentum, end of the growth, so it's much more dynamic, and it goes where the earnings surprises, the expectation that surprises are going to be in certain areas, and it goes ahead of the time in those areas. And there's a little bit of momentum, so the manager likes to see the guidance also positive on top of the earnings surprises that the companies are delivering. So that's we like this manager quite well. We introduced Castle Ark to the portfolio. That was I think March of 2010. So relatively new manager. Page 21 is the attribution for the first quarter. Page 22 is Chinook, the manager that we recently removed from our lineup, and it shows what we expect from Chinook. It's focused more on the high end of the growth. High growth manager with a combination of high quality and high growth with some cash flow generation, which is above average. The issue with Chinook was, and we had several discussions with Chinook over the last 6 months, is that while they fish on the high end of the growth, their ability to, and that's very important for high growth managers, is to anticipate what kind of earnings are going to be and in the next quarter. So that's something that they needed to work on more. And we have on our conviction list, we had that comment that we need to see their better ability to predict, particularly the negative earnings surprises. Because if you're high end of the growth, there's high expectations embedded by the investors. And if you disappoint even by a penny, the stock can be down 20% or 30% of one a day. So that's where we couldn't increase our conviction beyond a certain level. And part of our process is that focus list, we have 120 managers, and there are multiple candidates that are screaming to be included in your portfolio. So there is for each of the five managers, there are five or six managers who are equally capable to be included. So when we do our ongoing due diligence and do our quarterly calls and going on-site, it's a rehiring process all over again. So it's not enough for us if the manager has done well in the past or it has done well in our portfolio. We want to see how things look like right now. And if we are looking at that manager from a fresh perspective, if we have not hired that manager before, would we hire that manager today? And if we can't come up with that answer, then would you hire that manager, for your client today if you haven't hired them before? Then we have an issue. So it's four times a year plus one more when we do on-site. So five times a year, every manager that's in your portfolio goes through the rehiring process in our mind. So we have to refresh our thesis from scratch, and so our encounters will. I will go there, but anyway. Going to page 24 is Crosswind, and that's another manager that's relatively new. It, along with Castle Ark, it entered the portfolio during March of last year. And Castle Ark is, we expect that manager to outperform in a variety of market environments. You know, in weak markets, it's sideways market, low return market environment, as well as strong markets. There's a high degree of stock level insight that are embedded in the process. So that's in the middle. So it's very hard to say that it would underperform in any of the market scenarios. So that's kind of does not, when we talk to Crosswind, they don't have excuses for low quality or high quality, or if it's a weak market or a strong market, but the process is dynamic, looking for unrecognized growth wherever it is at any point. That's in the middle, and then we have page 26 is Eudaimonia. That was recently added to the portfolio. Primary focus is on change, company level change, companies at the lower end of market spectrum who are relatively ignored by investors, and where there is positive change in terms of earnings surprises, where the analysts are raising their earnings expectations, and where there is certain degree of investor recognition as well, some recognition in terms of relative strength. So that's the manager who focuses on positive change. Page 27 and 27 is Riverbridge, which focuses on secular growth and avoid areas of cyclical that are cyclical in nature. For them, when they the names entered Riverbridge's portfolio, they're looking at a 5-year or above time horizon and want to see secular growth in the portfolio. So each of the five managers, you know, their sources of returns are totally different. One is learning momentum. One doesn't care about where it can get ideas from. It's very dynamic in its growth, its crosswinds. Eudaimonia focuses on change, and Riverbridge focuses on secular growth. So that you can get all the flavors of growth in one portfolio. And the portfolio is less susceptible to scenario dependency.
So the last appendix I would like to go through is F on the firm update. Last year we started on a process of getting us more organized. And we signed up with SharePoint, which is a Microsoft product. And what it really does is, for me as a user, how I use it, it helps me be more efficient, store the data in a central place so all of us can easily access it. And also, important is for compliance reasons that, say, we have your, an easy example would be on the investment guidelines. You have the draft, then you make changes, and you can see who makes the changes, who approves changes, the whole process. So it will make our life easier, and hopefully, you know, you get your book sooner, you get your data quicker. So that's the big change. On the investment side, we're signing up with two new vendors, FactSet and Axioma, and at this time we're running both systems in parallel. Because of the SharePoint change, we had some changes in our administration and on the admin and operation side. On the investment side, there are no changes. It's the five of us. The only positive thing is, and that's Fawad got promoted last year to senior vice president, and our colleague Doug to vice president. Any questions we can answer?
On your top holdings, you're showing cash at 3%. Is that waiting to be used, or is that position?
That is usually the range, 2-3. It's less than 5%.
So fictional. This is just normal operating.
Yes,
it's fictional cash and go up and down.
Excuse me, I have a question. I don't know if it's for our staff or for you, but page 4 shows that we withdrew $250,000 a month for $1.5 million. Okay. And then the $10 million at one point,
yes.
What did we use that money for? Where did it go?
Yeah, the $250,000 a month is part of a drawdown of $3 million in total from various managers, and we need that for operating. We have about over $6 million a month going out in payroll plus other expenses.
Okay, so $3 million a month
is going out more than the contributions coming in.
Okay.
So we require $3 million a month from our investment managers, and we have various, there's 5, 6, 7 managers that we draw money from. The $10 million in this particular case was rebalancing to fixed income, away from equities to fixed income. It was $50 million that we got from four or five different managers, and $10 million came from the Valo Capital.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm confused by your chart. So you've terminated Chinook.
That's correct.
Totally.
Yes.
Okay.
So first, we trimmed it in first quarter in line with our conviction. So it's our conviction reflects on the portfolio. So if the conviction goes higher, it reflects in relatively higher weighting for that manager within the risk control parameter. If the conviction goes lower significantly, then it's reflected in the portfolio as well. So when we load a rank on Chinook, so it was consistent to trim it. At the same time, we were deciding to introduce a microcap exposure, so that happens seamlessly. So use the funding from Chinook.
But when you did your review of whether you would hire these guys again today, you concluded no,
yes.
And you terminated it.
Yes.
Okay, that's
yes.
What I want to know. Thank you. Paul, do you have any comments on members?
Thank you
very much. You guys want to have a 2-minute break?
We're going to go through fairly quickly the our part of it, starting with the monthly performance review for the month of May. And we have the market update along with the performance stats for the indices. And on the performance stat page, months of May saw a slight pullback in U.S. and non-U.S. stocks, which turned out to be kind of a precursor for this month, June, with the first half or 20 days of June being a little rougher. The last few days has kind of been a seesaw. We've seen volatility with strong up days followed by strong down days, and maybe that's telling us of the indecision where we are right now in the markets, given that volatility. And the markets have started to, the last couple of days, come back a bit. Today was another strong day. But overall, June's about 4% down in U.S. equities, roughly month to date. Overall, the one-year numbers continue to be very, very strong. It's not surprising since the markets have been straight up pretty much since the end of last August that we've had a little bit of a pullback. I think prior to the last couple of days being up, it was about 7% correction from the top to where we were 2 days ago, and we've gained a couple percent the last couple of days. Longer term, 10 years on the Russell 3, it's positive 3.4% now. As we recall, a year ago, we were talking about it being closer to zero. So the strength we've seen the last 2 years is starting to pull that real longer term number up. Growth has outperformed value, as Legato stated. And for the month of May, non-U.S. stocks were weaker for the month. Although the one-year number, the AQX US, is above the Russell 3000. What has also changed with this slight pullback, or a little more than slight maybe, in stocks is that bonds have rallied the last 2 or 3 months and have rallied fairly strong. You see that in the three-month number, up 2.65% for the Barclays aggregate. Yields have come down again fairly substantially as the economic statistics these last couple months have been decidedly weak. And I guess QE2 is ending this month, and the Fed has said there will not be a QE3, at least for the moment. And that's part of the whole equation of kind of risk coming off the table, along with the situation in Greece and potentially spreading to other European countries. But the bond market has been quite strong, and we'll see that when we get to some of our percentage of the overall plan. Page one on the performance review, we did rebalance $50 million, as Tom just stated, approved by the board, out of equity, split $40 million U.S., $10 million international at the beginning of June, which equated to roughly 3.5% that went into Dodge & Cox fixed income. As I said, we're down about 4% month-to-date in June, taking $50 million out. $1.5 to $2 million at least has been saved up to this point. And again, we said, when asked how to measure us, we said there's three ways, you know, how your plan is doing against policy, the fees that we can save by negotiation, and rebalancing being the third way. And that has added significant value the last couple of years, you know, being underweight during the down period and letting that run, and overweight in the recent up period and letting that run, up to a point where we became uncomfortable. Page two, the changes. We did see a monthly decline of roughly $14 million, but the 12-month change is still quite strong, up $227 million, reflecting the strong gains in the equity markets. You see just in the monthly change, with equities being down slightly and fixed income being strong, that fixed income changed by 0.7%. And part of the reason we wanted to do the rebalancing is we thought equities had been strong for quite some time and we're getting, you know, past the range of being below range in fixed income. And we didn't want the market to rebalance totally for us. We wanted to do that, some of that ourselves. So hopefully the equity markets will be strong and we'll have to rebalance out of equities again soon. That's the best possible, you know, situation we can see for the plan. Page three, the individual managers. Again, we took money out of domestic equities and international. That's not reflected at the end of May. It'll be reflected at the end of June. Dodge and Cox was bumped up $50 million, so that will get back towards target. And then we took an additional $20 million at the end of the month from LSV, or just recently, I should say, from LSV and Pyramus to get the money to fund research affiliates at $20 million, which will go in the beginning of the month. Into their RAFI Global Long Short product, and that's all set up also. Page four, cash levels. We see the fixed income has built up some cash. The equity cash continued to be fairly low until that money was raised the beginning of June. That would go up and then go back out of them. And then on page five, the performance of each of the managers. And all in all, we saw slight performance in the month of May, nothing alarming. The total plan was 18 basis points below policy, down 75 bips versus down 57. Legato was the one manager that had good performance within equities, and we've seen their performance turn around the last couple months, and as they said, June's been a relative positive month for them also. The negatives were all very, very slight, 10, 20, 25 bips, manager to manager. And you can see the alpha on the now 11 months of fiscal year 2011, with June being the remaining month, had been quite strong, 150 basis points at the total plan level. And good alpha pretty much across the board. The one manager on the 11 months that had been struggling, Legato is the one who's turned things around the last 2 or 3 months. So all in all, the portfolio held up well in May. We'll see about June. You know, hopefully we'll get this rally to continue the last couple days of the fiscal year. It's hard to believe it's almost over. Quickly on the rolling 3 years, page six, Dodge and Cox equity. We've seen an improvement from December 2008 to where their alpha is above zero now. 3 years, Pyramus has been pretty much at zero for a while, flatlining. LSV, page eight, has had a very strong positive trend the last 5 quarters. Delaware has been creeping up towards the 0% line. And Invesco, the REIT manager, actually had a positive return in May and is close to their original funding amount of $20 million. And their alpha has, in the short 4 months that we have on the rolling 3 years, has been trending up the last couple months also. And finally, Dodge and Cox fixed income has been very, very strong as the spreads have narrowed. And the bond market has rallied.
Well, it's a good thing we didn't pull out of Invesco 8 to 9 months ago.
It's a good thing when things were very, very uncomfortable. We kept our equities positions across the board, including Invesco. And my sense is we're not going to have a, you know, huge decline like we did in 2008 at this point. There's a lot of questions, obviously, across the board, but the one bright spot is corporate America and corporations across the globe with their balance sheets and cash levels, and valuations are not extreme one way or the other. They're, quote, reasonable. But there is a lot of volatility out in the world. I'll go to the top 10 holdings unless there's questions on performance or managers at this point.
Any questions, members? Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Top 10 holdings for June. This is taken from the end of May to June 17th, which was our kind of deadline date for mailing in. And some of the trends we saw in April continue in May. And that's the kind of high-quality defensive-type names have continued to outperform in May. BlackRock, the passive large-cap growth manager, you can see Microsoft for the first time in a while starting to outperform. And Coca-Cola and McDonald's, two really kind of defensive-type, you know, high-quality consumer growth names doing well relative also. Actually, if you look at McDonald's the last two or three years, it's been one of the best-performing Dow stocks there is. Next page on the large-cap value, again, Johnson & Johnson and Merck, two of the big pharmaceutical defensive type of names outperforming again for May. Nothing really of note on the downside there. On capital prospects, on the small cap, a couple of names were hit. Gulfport Energy, we've seen a lot of the smaller cap energy names get hit even before oil started to decline. We saw that. And with oil declining from about 108 to 91, we've seen some of the energy stocks continue to be weak relative. And Newell Rubbermaid was also a weaker performer. They did say in June they're slightly below the benchmark on a relative basis overall. Bless you. Delaware, a couple names hit were Qualcomm and Priceline. A couple winners were Allergan, again, a healthcare defensive type name, and Crown Castle. Overall, probably looks pretty benchmark-like. Dodge and Cox Equity, nothing to note. The one big relative basis, Capital One, was down 5%. And I guess there's always, from Washington, some talks about credit card reform, and that potentially is affecting them with that lovely Dodd-Frank bill. Legato on the next page. Look at this. Every position, all 10, are up on a relative basis and up very strong. So that kind of confirms what they're saying. On a relative basis, they're having a good month. And the the S&P 500, it's, I guess we call it BNY, it's really Mellon 500 now. We'll make that change. Again, IBM, AT&T, J&J, Procter & Gamble, Microsoft, on a relative basis, all up. Of course, it is an index, so the net is zero, so some of the holdings below the top 10 would be weaker on a relative basis. And the two non-U.S. managers, LSV, like Legato, is having a good month on their top 10 on a relative basis. At least the top six positions are all up, with four of them up fairly strong. And then Pyramus, pretty balanced. A couple positions, BP and Vodafone, down. And then Siemens and BASF, the chemical company, up. Overall, it looks fairly even. So nothing really unusual across the board in June from the top 10 holding positions. And we will continue to monitor this.
Any questions for Paul?
Okay, moving along. Next is, due to the adoption of approval to subject to outside counsel, which we'll update you on shortly, on RBC Infrastructure Fund and the research affiliates long short strategy being approved in the Special Situations Fund. We had to revise the Special Situation Fund policy and procedures to recognize that, and we've have a red line version for you to look at and approve, and upon approval or further corrections, we will finalize this. And you can see page one, we made some changes to the second paragraph to reflect that. Since infrastructure doesn't deal with private markets, we added "and private markets" there. And then page two, we included global long-short equity in the investable instruments. Infrastructure had already been there originally as a set. And that is it. So
it's all in common, maybe council. This is a technical change for what we've already said we wanted to do.
Yes.
And this does not mean that we are investing in anything without bringing it back to the board for full discussion and vetting.
Of course. Okay.
So this is more like a technical item than a policy item.
Right. This is a after the fact due to board action previously.
Correct.
So this is not, again, an opinion of whether that approval in infrastructure or long short is, you know, I mean, it's been approved, so it reflects that.
And, but we have to take action on this item, right?
I believe so.
Yes.
Is there discussion? Members, is there a motion?
I move to approve the revision language.
And I'll second it.
And seconded. Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you. Item D and E are verbal updates on the two actions that have already been approved by the board. RBC was subject to outside legal counsel review and satisfaction. And I know Tom has been talking with the attorneys, Scott and Andy, on RBC. We're getting close. There's a side letter that's still not finalized, but it seems like there's agreement on both. We're getting to a point of agreement, I believe.
That's correct.
So I suspect next month we'll bring that to the board.
Should be done. Fred Silva and I had a conference call last Friday with Gopin and Scott Smith, Hanson Bridges attorneys, but with just some final items on the side letter to tweak somewhat, because some of what the side letter we had originally put in, they actually amended the agreement, and some they left in the side letter. And so the Hanson Bridges attorneys talked on Monday with the RBC attorneys, and there will be some movement in the side letter. The agreement is stands pat now with the changes that have already been made. There will not be some movement in the side letter, which we're okay with. We wanted a few more days on capital calls, and they're going to stick with 5 days capital calls, things like that, but they're just some minor things. And that should be cleared up here pretty quick.
Okay, great. So there's no action, that's just a verbal update?
No, just a verbal update. Right.
And then item E on research affiliates, everything's in place. As we said, we've raised the $20 million from the two non-U.S. equally, right. 10 and 10. I think there was one thing that came out of that was a positive was the management fee and the allocation has been kind of lowered. There was a break point, and now that's kind of been so it's 0 to 100 million is a management fee of 75 bips with a carry of performance-based carry of 15%, and that's in our favor. And you know, everything's ready to go there, and I think they actually have the money.
They have the money, that's correct.
And they will buy in at the first of the month. So I think our timing might be good on that one. So those are the two verbal updates, and that concludes our report. Just information, Friday I'm going to be down in L.A. I've been subjected to my in-laws for a few days. And in calling managers to get me out of my in-laws' house. PIMCO.
You can record it.
PIMCO has agreed to see me, so I'll be visiting PIMCO on site Friday morning.
Thank you for alerting us to your.
Yes, my predictive name, yes.
His mother-in-law has a computer.
Does anybody have any questions at all about his trip?
I say Research Affiliates is right, or pretty close, right?
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough.
It's worth the drive.
Maria, you have a committee report.
Yeah, this is from our Internal Governance Committee. And basically, we met, it's been two weeks, it seems like long. Anyway, based on the findings of the audit, there were some recommendations made by the auditors, ETB, and they include some brush up on some policies and the writing of some understood policies. We had some understandings, but not necessarily written down. So, anyway, some of the items that were recommended were our accounting guidelines, personnel policies, purchasing policy, payroll processing guidelines, electronic data security policy, desk and process manual policy, and some cleanup of the investment policy language. So based on that information, Hank pretty much took the lead on writing these policies and that you found included in the document. So unless there was any particular questions, we pretty much went with what was recommended.
Any comments or questions of the committee chairperson here from our board? Tom, do you have any comments?
No further comments.
Can I have a motion?
I'll make a motion to accept as presented.
The committee report.
Second.
Okay, and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. And next item on our agenda is closed session. I don't believe we need one.
No, we don't.
So the last item is members forum and announcements. I was remiss. I want to welcome Michael O'Neill. Takes over in July. And then Joan Clendenin is back there in the corner, I think, where she was. There you are. Who also becomes a participating member in July 1st. So, welcome. Okay, Jim?
I have nothing today.
No comment.
No comment.
Oh, sorry. Member Flom? we are, the succession committee, of course, has met, so we plan on interviewing some of the candidates at our next meeting. So I think, I don't know, Mike, do you want to announce anything regarding the start time of our next meeting?
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought Tom was going to, but we're going to
Leave it up to Tom.
We're going to move it to 1 o'clock with the board.
So we have the three candidates, so we'll be meeting on the 13th.
Clarence?
Well, this is my last meeting, so I just want to thank the Stan Sarah staff for the great job they do. You guys do a great job, and I appreciate it anyway. And I want to thank Paul and SIS for the great job they do for us. And it's been an interesting 3 years, and I can't say I'm going to necessarily miss it.
Well, we're going to miss you, Clarence.
Yes, we will.
Mr. Martin?
Well, I'll second that. We're going to miss you. You've been a good member, as well as Linda. We're going to miss you, too. So, best of luck.
Mr. Martin, is that it?
That's
done?
It.
Okay, Clarence?
Echo the same comments. Thank you, Clarence. Thank you, Linda. You'll be missed, but you'll probably be going on to better pastures. You won't be thinking about this place. So, anyway, that's all I have.
And I want to thank the staff, too. It's been a great staff. I think I have 18 years of time in, and I really enjoyed working with the staff, and it's definitely been interesting working on with the board. And so I'm miss you, too, Clarence. So we're going off. I was surprised. But so anyway, so this is a little farewell. And thank you to Paul, too. You've done a great job of being our consultant.
We miss you both.
Mr. Grover.
Thank you to Clarence and Linda for your service on the board. Also, welcome to Michael O'Neill and Joan Clendenin. Reminder again, July 13th, retirement board meeting will meet at 1 o'clock, and we'll have the three candidates interviews with that meeting. I don't know of anything else on the agenda at this point, so it should go pretty quickly after 1 into the interviews. Also, in honor of Linda's leaving and memory of Don Burnett, we have to give you a couple riddles. Since he was quite the funny guy in the Riddler. Who was the best male financier in the Old Testament Bible? That would be Noah, because while everyone else was in liquidation, he was able to float stock. And of course, for the females, you know, the best female financier in the Old Testament was Pharaoh's daughter. She went down to the bank of the Nile and drew out a little profit.
Thank you, Tom.
Anytime is too much time. All right, meeting adjourned.